you're listening to the Time and Talks podcast. I'm your host, Dejal V. Patel, and this is the place where we have refreshingly real talks about the biggest problems moms face in motherhood and life and the spiritual solutions to solve them. If you're ready to reset your mindset with some major truth bombs, well then, let's dive in. Hello, my soulful mamas. Thank you so much for tuning back in. We are finishing off the Emotional Maturity podcast series. This is episode 3 in that series, and this one is all about giving you the guideposts of what it means to be an emotionally mature parent. If you haven't listened to episodes 94 and 95, you definitely want to take a listen to those because they are a prerequisite of fully understanding this whole series, this pattern of how to recognize and honor your trauma, how to heal from it, and then moving forward, how do we change and evolve from it? And each step is essential and it's necessary in that order in order for us to really move past our trauma and heal and make better choices and react to stressful situations in parenting and life in a better, more responsible and mature way. So let's do a little recap of what we've talked about so far. In the first episode in the series, we talked about what it really looks like to be raised by emotionally immature parents and how that affects us into our adulthood. What are the patterns that we carry out? This is really important because many of us don't even recognize it as a form of trauma. When you're raised in an environment where you never felt emotionally safe, maybe you didn't even feel physically safe. And so it really gives a name to the trauma that you've experienced, and acknowledging that and giving it a name is so important because then you can be in a empowered space to make the next step of how you're going to heal. Are you going to receive some outside neutral third party support? Are you going to then also combine that with your own inner work, inner healing, and spiritual growth? The second episode talks about that healing. Okay, so you now know that you've experienced this trauma, you've acknowledged it, you're not in a space of feeling like a victim and blaming your parents. You want to be empowered to heal yourself. So what does that really look like? It's not about focusing on when your parents are going to change and when they're going to apologize to you, because that may never happen. And so we have to really sit and be honest and be able to grieve that. But the next step is the empowered step of healing ourselves. And it's not something we can think our way out of. When we're triggered, when we have patterns of dysregulation, when we are forced to be in a state of anger and anxiety and burnout because of the experiences that we felt when we were a child and those survival patterns that still live within us. So when anything similar, whether it's with your kids or your partner or your boss, whoever it may be, when it triggers a feeling that's very close to how you felt like when you were a child, it goes into an automatic response where your fight or flight is activated and you're not thinking in your higher mind and you are cut off from your wisdom, your energy system, and we basically respond like we are primitive animals. It's just an instinctual reaction, that knee-jerk reaction. So how do we heal that? It's not about talking our way through it. It's not about thinking our way through it. That can help, but it's only going to take us so far. It's about physically and changing our physiology and our biology and our brain chemistry of learning how to regulate our nervous system. So we talk a lot about that in the second episode. And now, after you have acknowledged what you've experienced, you're working on healing and regulating your nervous system, you're becoming more aware of your energy system and your emotions. So this episode is really going to be your guidepost of understanding what you're working towards, the feedback of where you still need to grow and where you've already grown and how you have been maturing. And it's like the progress that you are making, you'll be able to see it when you recognize what it means to be emotionally mature. And I truly believe this is the most important part of the journey. This is where this whole destination of the experiences that we had in childhood, how we process and heal it, reconnecting to our inner power and our emotions so that we can evolve as a soul. We are spiritual beings in human experiences to be in these challenging relationship dynamics in order for us to push us to become emotionally mature. And our emotional regulation is directly linked to nervous system regulation. So as you train your body, change your brain, change your physiology through breath work, through vagus nerve stimulating exercises, as you train your body to feel what it feels like to be in rest and relax state, to feel safe, you're going to be able to access that state more often whenever something similar to those situations that used to trigger you back into feeling like a helpless child, you're going to feel more empowered. You'll be able to have that pause to be able to decipher, do I want to react or do I want to respond? This is what I'm feeling and this is what's boiling up for me, but I have enough awareness and self-control and willpower to be able to pause and determine how I'm going to respond. And that's what emotional immaturity is all about. We talk about we want to be more patient with our kids. We snap at our kids. We have these difficult power struggles with them. How do we break the patterns of not being like our parents and being dictators and commanding and being stern? We talk about generational pattern breaking. Well, if you want to be a cycle breaker, this is what it really means to be emotionally mature. So what does that look like? What does that mean? What is the steps to go there? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. It is more imperative than ever that kids have emotionally mature parents. We know this because self-regulation for kids can only be taught when we are modeling co-regulation. How we respond to our kids is essentially going to decide what part of their brain is getting developed in their childhood. Are they getting a more hyper-aroused survival state? Or when they are frustrated, when they are angry, when they have meltdowns, are they learning to ride through that without being scared, right? We have a safe space for them to be able to ride through that. This is how we are going to become cycle breakers of generational emotional immaturity. So when I started on this journey, it was very clear to me that physical maturity, your age, is not a reflection of emotional maturity. And I learned this very young just by witnessing my mom. And many times in my mind, I said, why do I have to act like the adult and be more rational and apologize? And she can act like the immature child. I've had that thought when I was 10, 11, in my teens. And when I was in my 20s and I realized I started taking on some of these patterns of being emotionally volatile and reactive and not being able to set boundaries, I realized that I was a 5-year-old emotionally in a 20-something body. I was stunted because I felt like that insecure 5-year-old living within me, needing validation, needing to be seen, needing to be heard. And so it was almost like I was healing that part of me. And I share that I put a picture of my 5-year-old self in my closet because I like to see her every day because this is who I'm doing the work for. And you might have heard of inner child work. This really helps a lot with reconnecting with the part of you that got stunted emotionally because you weren't able to process what was happening to you when you were a child. So I struggled with emotions. I numbed out for many years. I think the only emotions that I felt were anger or this false facade that I was putting out that I was happy. And I felt like I drank a lot in college and I started when I was a teen because it helped me feel. It helped me feel like a variety of emotions of just like letting go. When nobody models healthy expression and communication of emotions, we become parents and people who are trying to figure it out as adults. So I struggled with understanding for a long time what feelings meant and understanding how I could experience many different emotions at the same time. Usually when I felt angry, it was almost like I was so angry that I didn't even have love for the person. And I remember with my husband, I would have like these intense arguments and the first thought that would be like, oh, I made such a mistake getting married. Like it would be so extreme, like this is not going to work out. Or why did I get married to this person? And it was like very difficult to have, I feel angry, but I also have love for this person. That was really hard for me. And I still feel like at times when you see red, or I'm so angry, I might not go on those rages anymore, but inside I feel like I'm bubbling. It's hard for me to have the two emotions at the same time. So it's still something that I work at. I felt that when I went on a spiritual journey, I thought that you always had to be calm and the point was to always feel peaceful. But I learned, as I've shared on this podcast, that it is impossible for the nervous system to always be calm. That's not the journey of life, to always be calm and cool and collected and never let anything ruffle your feathers. The fluctuations of emotions is a natural part of the experience. It's going to help us understand what phase, like, are we in a dysregulated state? Are we in the edge of almost getting dysregulated in that window of tolerance? Our nervous system was designed to handle the ups and downs, the demands, the challenges of daily life. The problem is we were only geared to be able to handle the stress for 30 minutes. And many of us live in a state of chronic stress and friction within our system much longer than when the stressful moment in our reality happens. The external stressor eats at us. We lose sleep over it. We complain about it. We gossip about it. We judge people, right? We let it grow and grow and grow, and it gives a life of its own when it's like consumed our mind, our energy. It changes our personality. It changes us at our core. It takes us away from being the individual that we desire to be, and it starts solidifying those patterns of survival. When someone treats you a very similar way, the next time you're going to be that much more hyper-vigilant and triggered and have an exaggerated response if we don't heal that stressor and get those emotions cleared out when it happened at that time. Many of us go through this experience, and maybe we're on that journey. You're listening and you're like, yes, I'm on this journey right now. When we lack emotional maturity, we tend to have very black and white thinking. And you can see that in the world right now. You're either on my side or you're on the other side. And if you're on the other side, you are against me. There's no common ground. I think of internet trolls so much in this, because I've gotten some really, really like heated, mean, like, you don't even know me, and you're like spewing out so much hatred because I wore a mask when I had COVID with my kids and I didn't want to pass it on to my infant child. So many people were so triggered by that image of that. And it was just like really mind-boggling to me. And it just was a click that we are living in a world with highly emotionally immature souls. And so for me, I remember the first person who wrote me like such a horrible, horrible comment in a DM, I responded back in a reaction. And then after I sat with it, I was like, that's not me. Like, I resorted to that being triggered and reactive. And so I said, never again am I going to do that. And I had some more tests that came afterwards of these really rude, mean comments that were triggered towards my kids. And I deleted them and I blocked them. I did what was in my control. I didn't even engage or use any of my energy because it's not even allowed in my world. And I just sent the little prayer of, I hope you heal, because that's what it is. If you are that triggered and you feel the urge to push that anger and that pain that you have onto someone else and put that fuel into the universe, there's nothing else besides the fact that you are a broken, emotionally immature soul that needs to go on the path of healing. And so that's my little prayer. I hope you heal. And I don't even necessarily say it out loud, but it's just something that mentally I'm constantly saying when I see people acting bizarre or in exaggerated ways. It's like, I hope you heal. Send them love and be on your way. When we think in black and white thinking, this creates a lack of tolerance. It creates judgment. It creates blame. We judge ourselves. We are judging others. We are unwilling to embrace our differences and imperfections. As much as we try to say that we accept other people's uniqueness and differences, when it's something that we are strongly believe in, if anybody has a different opinion than us, it almost feels like a personal attack on our well-being, our thoughts, and it feels like a survival mechanism. It's like self-preservation. Like, we need to silence you. We need to cut you off. you have no clout and you have no ability to say your truth because we're going to tear you down. That's what we're seeing right now. So it's been a real extreme, and I share that because one of the most important behavior traits that we have to focus on healing when we want to become emotionally mature is going from being reactive to being responsive. That is what emotional maturity is all about. It's taking away from that knee-jerk reaction, those actions that we just do without even thinking. It's like something happens, someone says something, you say it right out, or you do it something without fully thinking the benefits. Is this for the highest good of all? Is this really what I want to do? Is this aligned? Or you're doing it from a place of hurt, from a place of feeling triggered, because that automatic brain pattern of that speed dial that goes into survival mode gets activated. And we are simply functions of these automatic knee-jerk reactions. And this knee-jerk reaction is important in emergency situations, right? Hot stoves, you place your hand on it, you quickly move your hand away. If there's a fire in your house, you quickly get your loved ones, you're not even thinking about it, and you're rushing out the door because it's about self-preservation, right? You're not sitting there and be like, oh, I'm going to need to take my concealer, I need to take my photo albums, I need to take my laptop and myself. You are just like getting whatever you can, getting the people you love and getting them out the door, right? So emotions and past experiences and habits and trauma all play into what creates our knee-jerk reactions, right? Our fight or flight response, the stress response. And when our stress response is on, that means that our safety part of our brain and body is turned off. The prefrontal cortex that is used for connection, regulation, compassion, higher thinking, that is all shut off. You cannot hear people fully. You are simply going to want to attack, right? The black and white thinking happens because when you're in survival mode, all it is life or death. And if you're against me, it's death. You're not really thinking it through and being like, this is really not life or death. You can believe that this is your truth and I can have my truth. Like the agree to disagree feels like it's going to affect you in a way that your freedom and your survival is going to be impacted. So what does it mean to respond, right? We can say as much as we want, I want to respond more patiently. Responding is a slower, more mindful approach, and it does require mindfulness to be able to be attuned with your body when there's a subtle shift in your energy, like boom, okay, I feel resistance. Oh, I feel friction. Oh, I feel like that loud noise created an impact in my body that feels like I'm on edge, or that impulse thought that comes through your head. Oh, you see cookies. So you're like, I'm going to eat a cookie. And you just take action without even thinking, without that pause. Like, do I really want to eat this cookie? Like you pause not to ask your brain, but you ask like your gut, like, is this what I should be eating right now? And then taking the action, right? It's slower. And yes, there's emotions that are involved because you are tuning in to your energy system, but it's not an emotional response, right? It's not like a knee jerk, like it's like tuning into your body to give you the answer and not your mind. So the action has to be aligned with the value of who you want to be, who you are. And so responding to a situation is the first step to make change in our life. The first steps of healing, pausing, taking time to move mindfully, to check into your energy every single day. This is the self-care that I constantly teach about the resets with the breathing, the resets with the meditation, the reset with the movement. This is what creates that space in your life to be able to know when your energy feels off and when it feels in flow. This is a whole world lesson, not just for parents. To live in a world where we constantly are provoked and defensive, and we see this divide as human beings that increases hatred and less tolerance and less consideration from each other, we need to really fine-tune this act of responding. And it's not something we can think or just talk through. It's changing our brain chemistry. And when you're constantly working on that to regulate your nervous system, you will get there. Some of the things that I've been using that helps me really expand my window of tolerance or expand my nervous system regulation is my Apollo Neuro, which is a stress relief wearable device that I schedule throughout my day when I need to focus, when I need to wake up, when I need a low energy or a high energy boost based on what it is. If I had a stressful moment and I need to calm my nervous system back down, it uses pulses that are soothing, that trains a parasympathetic nervous system to turn on because it's the touch is very, very healing for our nervous system. It sends messages from our body to our brain that we are safe. And so I wear that every single day. And I also use this other device called the Zen to stimulate the vagus nerve that runs through our ears. And so it's really focusing on that vagus nerve stimulation. I talk a lot about that in the burnout series. That's what's going to train our body to feel more safe and to train it out of that knee-jerk reaction, to train it to respond. So what are our guideposts of emotional maturity? Well, the first is that you can feel two opposite emotions about the same experience at the same time. You also do not need to always have an opinion or stance on something. It's okay for you to be undecided or be unsure about something, and also stay silent if someone is talking about someone or a situation that you don't fully know all the facts around. It's okay to not participate in that conversation, and it actually shows maturity. You're not quick to judge other people or yourself because you realize that humans are flawed. We all are on this healing journey and we make mistakes. It's a natural part of the human experience. So we look at mistakes as feedback of areas that we need to grow instead of failures. Like, oh, that's a bad person. You made a bad choice, so you're a bad person. We can separate the person from the mistake or the poor choice that they've made. Another telltale sign of emotional maturity is that a person is able to apologize humbly and make amends when they make a mistake. This is huge. And I'm not talking about those fake apologies. They are genuine, heartfelt. They acknowledge how you've hurt the other person, and they really look to making steps to change in the future. Another really important cue point is not everything needs a response, right? Choosing to consciously be silent is not only an act of self-love, but it's actually a good way of showing how to communicate effectively. Listening from a space of a regulated state without always needing to have your viewpoint be right or to be heard is really important to create connection, but also to understand when someone is not in the right energy space to receive what you're saying, to save and conserve your energy and not waste your energy, because you may feel then frustrated or disappointed after they don't really get it, or they might argue back, or they might make excuses. And so that was a waste of your precious energy. So being able to read a room is important. You also realize that you're not always meant to be calm and peaceful, right? Your nervous system is designed to be able to handle the stressors of everyday life. So stress isn't bad. It's just that staying in a stressed state and creating that friction for a duration of time that's longer than 30 minutes, and we're not helping our nervous system slow down, pump the brakes, and stimulating our vagus nerve to go back to our window of tolerance, that's what we need to work on. Being emotionally mature is a sign of emotional intelligence. You are aware of what feelings that you're having. You have a name to them. You also understand emotions come and go, that the natural experience of life is not to always be happy. It's to understand how to handle the unhappy emotions of life, that frustration and disappointment is a sign to show that you're reaching your edge of dysregulation. When do you feel in flow, safe, really aligned with your power? What is anger teaching you of the areas that you need to heal? How can you slow down when you're feeling anxious and out of control? And how can you regain control and feel grounded in your body and return back to your body? These are all signs. And so we are really aware of when we're in a friction state and when we're in a flow state, and we will quickly take the right steps to self-regulate. When you're emotionally mature, you realize that your parents are human beings with their own unresolved trauma that they haven't healed. And so it is your responsibility to heal yourself and be responsible of what the dynamic of the relationship with them is going to be. So focus on your healing first. And we also understand that kids can only be taught self-regulation through our co-regulation. So when parents come to me like, oh my God, my kids can't regulate themselves, and then I reacted like this, the number one thing is it's about focusing on you first and your kids second, because they're going to model everything that the energy that you put out, what you're showing them, how to handle emotions. So focus on yourself first and not beating them up, because the reality is their brain is still developing and they are supposed to be emotionally dysregulated. That is a part of their growth. And let's accept that and not look at it as a failure on our part or something negative that we need to force them to change in their life. It will happen as we help and train ourselves. So how can we practice being more emotionally mature? First, we have to learn to listen to what people are saying without interpreting or interjecting our point of view. When we're dysregulated, we're not able to hear the sound of human voices. So we're actually muffling out what others are saying and we're not actively listening or understanding them. And there can be no genuine connection if you're constantly just waiting when you can interject, put your point, try to prove you're right and they're wrong. It's not going to be a mutually beneficial conversation. So just because someone's saying something that's different than your beliefs, it's important not to take it personally. Only interject your opinion when you feel like the energy is aligned for them to hear you, when you feel invited. And so sometimes that's going to be a yes, and sometimes that's a no. Being able to learn how to agree to disagree and not feel attacked and not judge others based on their differences of opinions. Next, we have to be able to set firm yet compassionate boundaries. You're able to respectfully express your feelings without shaming someone or their feelings, and really be able to express yourself using I statements instead of you blaming statements, right? Like, you always are so loud. Can you stop? Versus, I see that you're so excited, but I feel dysregulated on edge when it's too loud. I'd really appreciate if you lower your tone, right? I believe that I statements are like what you observe, what's happening without like blaming the other person, what you're feeling because of that situation, and what you need. What do you prefer? What would you appreciate? What you're requesting. This is how we communicate in a way that others feel safe to say no, but we're able to say it in a way that is not undermining another person or yelling or being firm and too serious. Another practice we have to focus on is tuning into our energy, understanding when we're in a flow or friction state, when we're feeling stressed or safe. We're constantly learning how to check in numerous times throughout our day. So we're regulating our nervous system. We're learning how to regulate our emotions. They're both connected, right? Our nervous system is our body taking in information from our sensory system and communicating it to our brain whether we're feeling safe or not. Emotions are language. So it's our brain communicating to our body whether we're feeling safe or not. I feel angry. I feel frustrated. I feel disappointed. I feel tired. This is creating an experience and letting our body know whether it's in a safe or stressed state. So being able to notice impulses and also the sensory information that's coming in is going to be crucial. Another important thing to be mindful of is how you behave when your opinion is challenged. People with low emotional maturity lash out. They criticize, they gossip, they get defensive of people who don't agree with them. When we're triggered in that way, our survival or our identity feels attacked. So you are either against me or you're not. We have to be able to understand what triggers us in that complete mode of like, you are against me and we're not seeing eye to eye and I can't respect you. And then it lingers on. Do you take things personally? Like, and it makes you feel rejected, makes you feel not heard, makes you feel abandoned. What is it triggering? That's going to be important to be able to understand what needs to be healed. And also notice when you're trying to change someone else's emotional state because you're uncomfortable because of what emotions that they're having. You feel like you don't know what to say and you just want it to go away. So you're kind of using that toxic positivity, or you're just like, don't worry about it. It's not that big of a deal. Like, you're trying to change the subject. You're trying to redirect them without fully holding space for them to let their emotions move through. So these are things that you want to keep an eye out, because these are the practices in daily life that's going to help you be more emotionally mature. So let's quickly go through them. It's learning to listen actively without always having to interject your point of view. Learning how to set firm yet compassionate boundaries. Learning how to tune into your energy daily. Noticing how you behave and how you feel when your opinion or belief is challenged, and notice how you are able to hold space or not hold space when someone comes to you and shares their biggest feelings, when they're having a meltdown, when your child's having a tantrum. What bubbles up for you? Is it anxiety? Is it those knee-jerk reactions? Or you're able to have that slow response to be able to think how you, what you want to say and how you want to say it and the tone you want to say it. Are you able to stay regulated in those states or not regulated? So I'm going to give you a quick run through of the signs that you're looking for to be an emotionally mature parent. You are supportive of your kids and their big feelings. You're able to hold space for them. You are a solution seeker. You're able to see problems and try to fix them instead of overreact and judge. You are always looking to find new ways to make the best out of a solution. You're able to feel and think at the same time. So even when you're upset with someone, you can still think about solutions. You can still think about, in this moment, I need to walk away. I need to pause. I need to take a breathing break. You're able to have that pause before you respond. So you still have access to your higher level of thinking. You are someone who's emotionally connected and you want to build connection with your loved ones. You're able to slow down, to listen, to see, to support others, and use a respectful tone. Use silence when necessary to be able to let the other person feel connected. Connection is not about, this is what I would do if I was in your situation, or, oh, don't be so hard on yourself. It's not that big of a deal, or the toxic positivity. It's to be able to connect with what they're feeling right now. Like, how can I help you? What do you need right now? Is there something that I could say or do to support you? I'm here for you. That's what genuine connection looks like when you're emotionally mature. It's not about you. It's about them. A emotionally mature parent is empathetic. They're self-aware and comfortable with their own feelings. They have compassion when they mess up and when they have big feelings, so they're able to have empathy when their kids have big feelings. And lastly, emotionally mature parents are dependable. They provide physical safety and emotional safety. And there's no shame that just because you made a bad choice makes you a bad person. There's nothing that's connected to their emotions and how they are as a person. All emotions are invited. All emotions, when you mess up, are shown with signs of humbleness and apology that I'm so sorry that I was dysregulated and this is the steps that I'm going to take to move forward. You're able to be that safe space that your child needs to go to anytime that they have a problem or they just need a loving, compassionate support system. So thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope this gave you some nuggets of wisdom that you can carry with you. If you found value of this, I'd be so appreciative if you share it on Instagram, if you share it with your friends, if you take 11 seconds of your time and write a rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. That would mean so much to me and helps get the word out so more people can hear the podcast. Thank you so much, guys. Until next time, bye. If you've been loving the Time and Talks podcast and you find value from it, I would be so eternally grateful if you take a moment of your time to leave a rating and review over at Apple Podcasts. And when you do, I'd love to gift you my 7-day stress detox course. All you gotta do is screenshot your review before you submit it. Email it to me at thejal@thejalvpatel.com. And when you do, I'll inbox you the details of the course. This course has my go-to tools anytime I feel impatient, angry, frustrated, and I come to them almost every single day. And I promise these are the tools that you're going to want to have in your back pocket too. And if you haven't purchased the Meditation for Kids book, definitely do so now. You can purchase it anywhere you buy books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, IndieBound, BAM, and you can go to meditationforkidsbook.com to get more information on the Meditation for Kids Masterclass course. If you're a complete beginner and learning how to teach meditation to your kids, this is the step-by-step roadmap that's going to teach you how to teach your kids meditation without having to become a certified meditation expert. Thank you so much, guys. Bye.